Welcome to Combos from the Couch by LifeStance Health, where leading mental health professionals help guide you on your journey to a healthier, more fulfilling life. Hello, everyone. I'm Nicolette Lianza, and on this episode, I'm excited to talk to Regional Clinical Director Angel Kramer, and she'll be helping us to understand more about sleep paralysis. So it's always great to have you on, Angel.
Thanks for having me.
So let's jump in. What is sleep paralysis?
Sleep paralysis. What an amazing topic to discuss, and one that so many people experience and not a whole lot of people understand or even know how to talk about it. I think most of us have a general idea of what sleep paralysis is. If not, we've at least seen it in art, in media. It's been written about in music. One of the pieces of art that tends to come to mind is a painting by Henry Fuseli. It's from the late 1700s. So like sleep paralysis is nothing new. And in this painting, there is a woman in her sleep guard, and she's thrown back in anguish in her sleep. And there's this little impish-like demon setting on her chest. And that is probably one of the most accurate depictions of sleep paralysis that I think I've ever seen. And that is because sleep paralysis is the experience of consciously waking up from sleep, but your body is frozen. You can't move, you can't make sound. And many people feel a heaviness on their chest in that moment.
Hence the demon then sitting on
the
chest.
That's setting.
Yeah, okay.
When we go to sleep, our brain shuts down our body, so that way we aren't acting out our dream. I'm not a sleep specialist, so I'm not going to start throwing out the names of the chemicals and actions and whatnot, because I'm no expert on that part of it by any means. But the gist of it is, our brain shuts down the movements in our body. And when sleep paralysis happens, our consciousness wakes up, but our body doesn't. And this happens possibly to about 8 to 30% of the population.
Oh, that could be, if it's upwards to 30%, that's a good chunk of the population.
Good chunk of the population.
Yeah.
And that's just the people reporting that they're experiencing.
Fair point.
There'd be plenty of others who assume it's just a run-of-the-mill nightmare. Which takes us to our next part of this. Nightmare is what sleep paralysis used to be called. And we get that term because in Old English, mare meant demon. So this was our night demon.
Okay.
This creature that we believed sat on our chest and had us pinned down at night. You might see in some literature it called an incubus. You might see it in some literature called a succubus.
Succubus, well, I've heard that. Yeah.
It is our night demon.
Wow.
And we see this across numerous cultures, across numerous spiritualities, that all might call it something different. But it tends to feel bad. It tends to feel negative. It tends to feel heavy. And that's why we associate it with something spiritually negative.
Okay.
The Anglo-Saxons believed that it was the small imp-like demon that sat on our chest. And in the United States, we tend to be pretty Eurocentric, and we have brought that belief over with us as well. In countries that are more Islamic leaning, Middle Eastern countries like Egypt, they might associate this a little bit more with the jinn. And we in the United States and Western cultures know the jinn as the genie.
Oh, okay.
But this isn't the blue genie from Disney's Aladdin that's going to sing a song to you and grant you three wishes. This jinn was a little darker, is a little darker. And that's the presence that they tend to see in their sleep paralysis experiences. Sleep paralysis can happen for a multitude of reasons. While we don't fully understand why exactly it happens, why our brain has this brain glitch, we can narrow it down to a handful of things that can make it more likely to happen to us. It could happen because we've not gotten enough sleep. It could happen because our sleep patterns are disrupted. People who are coming out of jet lag can experience sleep paralysis a little bit more often. People who work a night shift might experience it a little bit more often. People who abuse substances, people who take in too much caffeine, people with mental health disorders, with narcolepsy, a family history of sleep paralysis. And very commonly, it results in people who have been exposed to trauma.
I'm curious. So if I'm a fly on the wall observing someone in a sleep paralysis episode, what would I be seeing?
Yeah. So sleep paralysis is terrifying. If what I have just described is not scary enough, the actual experience of sleep paralysis is panic-inducing.
Okay.
When we tend to wake up in that sleep paralysis, we are feeling fear. We're frozen. Our body's not moving.
That's scary
in and of itself.
Mm-hmm.
Our chest feels heavy. Our breathing feels weird. And most people experience some type of hallucination in this experience.
Okay.
And that hallucination, we could look at it from a scientific perspective. We could look at it from a spiritual perspective.
Mm-hmm.
We can even look at it from our brain can be a messed up place and it tends to pull out the negatives.
Mm-hmm.
But what people tend to see in that experience, like I had touched on earlier, is dark and negative and can feel very evil.
Okay.
Some people feel there's something in the corner watching them. Some people report seeing ghost-like figures. They report seeing shadow people. Some people report aliens. In fact, in the United States, it's a very common experience for people to report believing and feeling they had been abducted by in their sleep paralysis. They can also feel like they are levitating, like they are off the bed, they are floating. Some people report feeling like they're being dragged off of their bed. The blankets are being pulled off of them. Terrifying.
Yikes. Stuff. Okay. So I have to admit, Angel, I guess I had this like very simple view of you're stuck between the stages of sleep and your body's rigid because during a certain stage of sleep, your body does go rigid. And so you're consciously up and you can't move. So that's the terrifying part. I actually didn't recognize all this other aspect to it. You're like blowing my mind. I'm like, whoa now.
Yeah. While trauma can influence and impact, sleep paralysis in and of itself is traumatizing.
Yeah. I can see that.
This is an experience that once you have it and you have it with the hallucination, you'll probably never forget it.
And especially if this is happening not just one time, it sounds like it could be very traumatizing. It was one time, but if you're someone who experiences, I hate to say ongoing or consistently or just more than a few times, I can't imagine again how terrifying and again why it's described as a demon.
Yeah, absolutely. It is not surprising that we have linked this to a spiritual component and the demon associated with many mythologies.
Mm-hmm.
Because pre-modern science, how else would we have explained that experience?
Mm-hmm.
If not through spirituality, if not through a presence outside of our realm. Dreaming in and of itself and sleep in and of itself is something that has been mysterious and held a mystique throughout most of our history. So then to add this, that's mind-blowing.
No, it really is. Yikes.
Yeah.
So I know that I'm throwing kind of another, I'm going to throw a curveball here, sleep terrors. Okay, mm-hmm. So we know sleep terrors is something, at least what I understand about sleep terrors, is something you might see that with little kids where they seem to be up, but they're not up, they're still sleeping. And it's different than sleepwalking and stuff like that, but there's intense fear. They're screaming, they're afraid, they're in a sense of terror, but they're not awake. This is different than sleep paralysis.
This is different. Yeah. So definitely. For night terrors, most of the time it happens with children. Toddlers on up through childhood, adults can experience this also.
Mm-hmm.
When they wake up the next morning, they don't usually remember this.
Yeah.
If my toddler has a night terror and wakes up tomorrow, she's going to be hunky-dory when she wakes up
tomorrow.
Yeah. I will be the one traumatized with sleep paralysis. The person experiencing it remembers it.
That was well put to distinguish.
Real.
Yeah.
moment, we are hallucinating. We are still slightly in sleep. And it is so terrifying because we can't really tell ourselves that this isn't real because it feels real. And there's not really a whole lot that's been proven successful in preventing this.
That's where I was going to go. Any strategies at all that help?
There are some that help, some of which I can vouch for personally as being helpful.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the basic ones are improving upon what might be triggering it.
Okay.
If you think it might be coming from a mental health disorder, let's try to get that under control. Mm-hmm. If it's coming from anxiety, let's try to have a soothing bedtime routine. Let's get ourselves in that headspace. Let's go back to childhood and have a bedtime routine.
Mm-hmm.
If it is from poor sleep hygiene, let's figure out what we can do to improve our sleep. Let's get on a routine. Let's get on a structural schedule. Let's do what we can to make our sleep feel better and safer.
Mm-hmm.
And that might include making sure that we're sleeping in darkness. Most of us have some kind of electronics in our room. And even something as small as that red dot that is always on our TV can disrupt our sleep, even if we don't readily know it.
Mm.
Having a safe, soothing, quiet, perfect temperature bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
And I say perfect, meaning what works for you. What might be a great temperature for me at night might not work for
right.
you.
Right, got you.
So making sure that we have that space created for ourselves, because sleep is vulnerable.
Yeah.
We're vulnerable in our sleep. And on an evolutionary level, we still know that. So making sure we feel safe when we're going into that sleep at night. It can also be helpful to sleep on our side.
Okay.
For some reason, and this is one that I can vouch for personally, sleeping on our back tends to be when we experience sleep paralysis.
That's interesting.
Right? Up to this point, I have not found research to validate that or identify the correlation. Like, I could speculate and explore that a little bit, but at the end of the day, we don't really know. If anybody knows that, send me that information.
Right,
I'd love to read that research. But making sure we're sleeping on our side can minimize the possibility of sleep paralysis. Cutting back on caffeine can help limit that. Making sure that we are processing through our traumas and what might be building up behind the scenes for it. All of those are ways that can help us to minimize it in the moment when we're experiencing it. It can be helpful to try as best as we can to remind ourselves to take a deep breath.
Mm-hmm.
Breathing helps us in so many ways. And if nothing else, breathing can help to limit that fear response that we're experiencing in that moment. It can also be helpful to have a mantra that you can tell to yourself. Like,
okay,
I know this is a dream. I know I am sleeping. I know this is not real. I'm okay. I'm safe. I'm okay. I'm
okay.
Safe. And telling that to yourself. Because while we can't move our body and we can't say anything, our brain is still functional. It can also be helpful to try to reconnect with our body at the ends of our limb. So the length of our body. And if we can focus on making even the smallest movement, let me wiggle this pinky finger. Let me try to wiggle a toe. That can help get our body to awaken up a little bit and to pull us out of that paralysis.
In a way, is there like a trying to wait it out?
Some of it is just a waiting game.
Is it? Okay.
Sleep paralysis, on average, tends to last somewhere between about 30 seconds and a couple of minutes.
That can feel very long, though, when you're in that dark terror there. Yeah.
It can feel like hours.
Right.
When there is something evil in the corner of your
right.
That's where that mantra can come into place. I am okay. I am safe. I am sleeping. This will be over soon. Other people can wake us in those moments. There's a common belief that floats around that you shouldn't wake a person who is sleepwalking or in a night terror or something like that. Sleep paralysis is different.
Oh, okay.
Sleep paralysis, if you have a partner or someone in your room or a pet that can wake you up, you will be infinitely grateful
Okay.
If they wake you in that experience, because it is just a matter of the brain sending that chemical down the body to wake it up.
Got you.
We won't be stuck in that experience. We won't wake up traumatized. We might wake up swinging a little bit, but that's just our body still reacting to the paralysis.
Wow. Great tips. Anything else you'd like to share? Any other takeaways?
I would also like to add that while we don't actually know a whole lot about this scientifically, that does not mean there isn't help out there. A mental health provider with some experience, some knowledge of sleep paralysis, or even just to help you through the diagnosis that you might have, can help to minimize the impact and the frequency of sleep paralysis. Mm-hmm. You might be one of those people that has sleep paralysis in an isolated one and done experience. You could also have recurrent sleep paralysis, and working with a mental health provider can help minimize those for you. If this is an experience where it is impacting your sleep night over night, you're scared to go to sleep, you don't want to experience this again, it is truly disruptive to your well-being, it would also be important to reach out to your primary care provider to see if there's something medically contributing to this. There could be other sleep disorders happening that are increasing the odds of sleep paralysis happening. If you are of the mind and in belief that this could be something spiritual, I'm not here to negate that. I'm not here to say that is incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
It might be helpful to reach out to someone spiritual in the faith that you belong to, whatever kind of spiritual leader that might be, another person within that faith that you trust to explore this, to figure it out for yourself in the lens of your spirituality. And if we can figure that out, if we can find some belief that helps encompass us in a sense of safety, that can also help minimize the amount of sleep paralysis and the impact it's having on us.
Very true. My gosh, Angel, this has been a fascinating conversation. And I learned quite a bit that I realized I wasn't understanding about sleep paralysis. So my gosh, thank you again for sharing your tips and tricks and your knowledge about this.
No problem. No problem.
I'd also like to thank the team behind the podcast, Jason Clayton, Juliana Whedon, and Chris Kelman, with a special thank you to Jason Clayton, who edits our episodes. Thank you for listening to Comments from the Couch. Take care, everyone.